In most election years comes the call for a return to civility in politics, which is usually then drowned out in a sea of negative ads and far-slung mud. Undaunted, the Maine Council of Churches has launched an initiative called the Covenant for Civil Discourse, which encourages hundreds of candidates for public office in Maine to abide by a general set of rules of behavior. Keith Shortall spoke recently with the council's Reverend William Barter, Bowdoin Assistant Professor of Government Michael Franz, and Dan Shea of Colby's Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement about what's happened to civility in politics and about the call for what Barter says is a pledge to respect our political opponents, no matter how much we may disagree with them.
The civil discourse would be refraining from personal attacks against people. Even though people have the right to disagree, they don't necessarily have an inherent right to attack one another. To refrain from making statements that characterize other opponents as evil, bad people, and to make sure that the statements we make about other people are true in defense of our own opinions. So honesty would also be part of civil discourse, to value honesty and truth, and to try to find workable solutions for problems, rather than to create more problems through our lack of civility. And beyond that, too, to hold others to civility, so that for politicians, that might be their surrogates or other folks who support them. For voters, it might be the way that we talk about the political process, about people who don't vote as the same way we do, or about other people's candidates.
I'll play devil's advocate here, and some might see this as, hey, you're taking the fun out of politics. That in the course of American politics, it's always been a mudslinging, rough-and-tumble Red Sox, Yankees kind of that was just sort of the general accepted way that this was carried out, and that some people actually like it.
If you don't mind, maybe
Dan.
I've done I was able to do a little bit of research on that issue with some students, and what we found is there are peaks and valleys of the sort of nasty vitriol in American politics. That it sort of comes and goes. So on one level, it's accurate to say that we're used to this. It's not beanbags. It's politics is tough stuff in America. But what we've noticed is in the past 20 or 30 years, there hasn't been this decline. It hasn't bounced back to a more civil period. So you're right, it's always been that way. But there's also been periods of sort of calm and sort of regrouping, which we're not seeing in the past few decades.
And Michael Franz, this is not just in the course of the campaigns, but in the process of governance itself.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things that Dan's onto something with the historical analysis, one of the things we know about the partisan politics of today is that the ideologies, the two major ideologies, are lining up more perfectly than ever with the two major parties. So whereas in the past there were conservative Democrats and liberal Republicans, they have migrated to each of their respective parties such that the ideologies line up quite nicely with the two parties. And so what that means is that there is a stronger cohesive team on either side. And those cohesive teams view the other side as dangerous to American policymaking and to American elections. And that is contributing to the increasing incivility that we see.
So are you saying that what we're seeing in how politicians talk and how they run their campaigns is more of a really description of the American electorate? Than, in other words, it has moved to match what is out there? Or has the tenor that's been created polarized people into these two corners?
Yes, on both. The question on what causes what is really a major issue for the political science on this. There's some evidence to suggest that the sorting happened at the elite level first, that after the civil rights era in the 1960s, conservatives moved towards the Republican Party out of the Democratic Party in the South, and that polarization happened at the top and voters responded. But there's also evidence to suggest that the two parties have appealed to respectively liberal and conservative base voters, such that the voters themselves polarizing are what drew the parties apart. Either way, what we end up with today is parties that are farther apart than they've ever been, more cohesive within the party than they've ever been, and each side sees the other side as offering something dangerous.
So, Reverend Barter, how does a group such as yours in that landscape set out to change what appears to be really a an entrenched a polarity of ideologies that even powerful politicians have found difficult to move?
Well, I think that that's a really good question. I'd like to be able to say we'd have it solved in 5 days, but I think that might be unrealistic. The lack of civil discourse smacks of an unethical behavior that we believe has increased greatly over these past generations, to the point where we're, I think most voters say, and I'm not the political scientist here, that we're pretty paralyzed. It makes us less able to deal with things in our society that churches certainly would support, like feeding the hungry and being people of peace and prosperity for folks who are living in poverty. So to that end, you know, educating people about the negative consequences of such an uncivil discourse, that's certainly one way that we go about it. And another way that we do very concretely, the main council of churches, is that we ask folks to sign on to a covenant for civil discourse. We ask candidates to do it. We invite voters to do it. And we ourselves, members of the main council of churches, model that on our council, and we sign that covenant as well, so that people can agree and at least have the language and codify, in a sense, a set of behaviors that are more civil.
Thank you all for being here. Dan, Michael, William, appreciate your being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.